Support for WGTD's morning show comes from the generosity of the family and friends of the late Frank and Beverly Falduto, two lifelong Kenoshans who devoted much of their lives to the community in general and to WGTD in particular. Mr. Falduto played an essential role in creating WGTD nearly 40 years ago and later served as station manager and occasional morning show co-host. And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTDHD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and it is once again time to welcome back into our studios Nan Calvert, and her monthly visit to the program always includes a very interesting guest, somebody who is working in the field of the environment, and in this particular case, Nan has chosen very, very well with somebody who heads up a very, very exciting, interesting program, which we're going to hear about in just a second. And this is actually a case, Nan, in which we're talking about someone with whom you have so much in common, and yet the two of you have never met till this morning, just
a few minutes ago. That's right. We've never met in person until just a few minutes ago.
But so tell us about the connection before we introduce Chris to our audiences.
It was one of those sort of happy circumstances. I was going through some emails from the Southeastern Wisconsin Invasive Species Consortium, and someone mentioned the Community Conservation Corps, and someone else chimed in and said, "What is that?" And one of our wonderful and dynamic board members, August Marie Ball, knows all about it, and Chris knows her too. And so I got Chris's contact information and called him up, and we had a really nice conversation on the phone, and so we're here today.
Wow. And just the little chatting that you've done, it's like, it feels like you've known each other all your lives because you care about so many of the same things.
It does.
Very good. So we are welcoming to our studios today Chris Litzau, who is president of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. I love the name. I want to make sure I get all those words in the proper order. So first of all, Chris, we welcome you to the morning show. We're so glad you're here and very excited to talk with you about this really exciting program and the way in which it's transformed a lot of lives of people who, in so many cases, find themselves disadvantaged one way or another. First of all, give our listeners a little background on where you come from originally and kind of the path which ultimately takes you to where you are now.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks. And good morning, Greg. Good morning, Nan.
Good morning.
And thank you for allowing me here. I really appreciate it. So I ran for about 15 years the Milwaukee Community Service Corps, which serves the greater Milwaukee area. And again, using the youth corps model, back in 2008, I had the wonderful opportunity to go into the homes of the alumni, many of the alumni, or I should say the few alumni from the CCC, the Civilian Conservation Corps of the 1930s.
Wow.
It was phenomenal. And the reason was I was coordinating the 75th anniversary of the CCC in Wisconsin. And so I had a chance to go out, and I was in Port Washington. I was all over the southeastern Wisconsin area. Mm-hmm. And what came up repeatedly were two messages. The first was the CCC changed my life. CCC changed my life. So these individuals, call them old timers. I don't want to offend anybody, now they're in their early 90s. But in any case, it set the trajectory. They were unemployed at the time. It was during the Depression era, and so it really made a difference. The second message that came up is, this made a difference in my life. Why don't we have anything like that here? And it was Racine, Kenosha. I mean, it was all over the place. I mean, this wasn't just Milwaukee-centric. This was all over southeastern Wisconsin where I was visiting homes and the individuals. And that was really the genesis for saying, we had been looking at I had been operating in Milwaukee-centric, and Milwaukee has certainly a number of needs. But that really was the genesis for the Great Lakes CCC, Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. And so as the name suggests, CCC is really a fundamental, the Youth Corps model is a fundamental component of the way we operate and of our organization. And so that's really the history. And so Great Lakes CCC has been operating since late 2011. And I was just sharing with the Racine Community Foundation the other evening that a year ago we had one crew of five young adults that Mayor Dickert swore in. Today we're at 20 young adults, three crews, just Racine, in Racine I'm referring to. And then next year we'll double. In 2015 we'll double. And a lot of that is driven by the opportunities, the need, the way our program is structured.
Explain to our listeners who might not be, although I think a lot of public radio listeners are actually very acquainted with the notion, but maybe sketch in a little more detail what we're talking about with this sort of youth core model, because that's really essential to understanding what this is all about.
Yeah, you bet. So in the 1930s, the Civilian Conservation Corps was formed, and essentially what it did is it enrolled young adult males at the time, typically between 18 and 25 years old. And those individuals were then placed onto work crews, And the program operated in a military style, you could say. In other words, it was regimented. They had a strict schedule that they would adhere to. But it also had two components, or I like to look at it as two hemispheres. There is an education component where they would learn typing, writing, things like that. And then there was the work-based component where they'd actually go out into the field, into the environment, into the community, build forests, roads, parks. I mean, all over. I'm sure many of your listeners are aware of the legacy of the CCC, but for those who aren't, Red Rock out west, the amphitheater. I mean, just phenomenal, a legacy of phenomenal parks, national parks, local parks, roads, things like that, that were developed and constructed by the CCC. So that is what we consider the Youth Corps model. We are actually the modern day version of that. And so modern day refers to the fact that we're still operating in those two halves. We have an education component and we have a work-based component. But our education component is really structured or framed within the context of disaster response. So some of your listeners may recall civil defense, things of that nature. We're looking at having young adults. We believe that every young adult can play a role in the event of an emergency or a disaster within their community. And so we're working to provide them the skills and the credentials to do so. And that's our education component. And so that might be certainly a driver's license, commercial driver's license, a number of certifications related to hazardous waste, forklift certification. I heard, you know, manufacturing, the announcements earlier. We look at the way we structure the education component is, in a disaster, there are three phases. There is rescue, so you need some health care, CPR, first aid, other credentials like that. Then there is recovery, so now you're dealing with the actual removal of, I mean, that might be flooding and cleaning out basements, those types of situations. And then the last is rebuilding. And so if you look at Hurricane Katrina, for example, and the aftermath of that, where the rebuilding of Louisiana really afforded the opportunity to bring in emerging technologies, new. And so therefore, our young adults who are disadvantaged, we're actually looking at them as privileged and trying to bring in the newest opportunities for them to learn cutting-edge technologies. And I was mentioning earlier that, as an example, our core members train on a compressed natural gas bi-fuel vehicle. That's our crew training vehicle. And it's an opportunity that is rare for the general public. And for them, they're able to attest to the fact that, hey, here's how it operates. Here's what you need to know. And so they move, as I was saying, from server, or being served, I should say, to server. They're being able to be a mentor now to the general public. So it's pretty remarkable.
Yeah. What is the mechanism by which a given person gets connected to the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps?
Yeah, typically it's been, well, there was an ad, or I should say an announcement placed by the Journal Times, and that really led to this cascading of word of mouth of individuals who have come forward. We also have a good partnership with the Workforce Development Center, and individuals who are active in their programs are also co-enrolled into our program. And so, you know, it's that's where it started, but it's now proliferating through word of mouth. And as an example, so we, you know, we were working at the, our crews were working at the Racine County bike trail doing invasive species removal. We were, that was where we were teamed with SC Johnson employees, and our crews were leading them. That was really, really neat. And there were a couple of young adults who were there volunteering. You know, they had an interest in the environment. And we said, hey, we're an AmeriCorps program. And AmeriCorps works this way, Greg. Essentially, you enroll and you have a year, you commit to a year of national service. Or within a year's time frame, you invest a certain number of hours. In our case, it's 300 hours of national service, and typically that's in an environment, in an environmental improvement context. And so he said, if you're already interested in doing this, why don't you come along with us? Because not only will you get a scholarship, a college scholarship, but we also will put you through, you know, you'll learn chainsaw certification, you'll get a number of, a variety of other credentials as well along the way. And it's funny, I'll just share one of those individuals. Her name was Maria Orozco. She's a senior at Horlick High School, and since then she's been able to continue to leverage or grow her experiences. And she was just announced the runner-up for Miss Latina Racine. Aww. And so, you know, all these things build. It's really stacking the opportunities for the young person.
Hmm. I know that you were talking about four different kind of guiding principles in the way that you operate and the kind of difference you are hoping to make in people's lives. And right at the top of this was this idea of people who probably maybe for most of their lives have seldom, maybe never thought of themselves as leaders, who in so many cases, for one reason or another, find themselves almost exclusively seeing themselves and being viewed by others as recipients of help. And part of the point of this is to try to turn that around. So they start to not only see themselves as, but in fact become leaders who are able to lead others in this particular way.
Yeah, you know, Nan and I were talking earlier about the fact that four-letter word, hope. And so when someone is a recipient and is always doesn't have the opportunity to shine and build that confidence and build the hope in themselves, in their future, so that's where we come into play. And as you mentioned, we have four components to our program: leadership development. I mentioned the SC Johnson employees. We had been, our core members had been partnering with the 21st Century Preparatory School, and I smile, it's like herding cats when you have 95th and 6th graders out in the environment. But they, our core members, they did such a phenomenal job. And when you look culturally as well at who is in our program and who are some of these urban youth, you know, urban school children, there's a natural affinity there and a cultural relationship, and it was just phenomenal to watch. And I mentioned the CNG vehicle, that where they're taking the lead, they're able to say, oh, yeah, here's how it works, and they become privileged in that respect. They become privileged in opportunity. So leadership development is one component. The work, the credentialing education component or workforce development component, where they're acquiring national portable credentials, certifications, licenses. That's the second component. experiential learning, where they're actually going out and doing things, learning as they go out in the field. And then the last piece is the attainment piece, where when we talk about attainment, I'm really talking about post-secondary education, lifelong learning, really career development, and that's where that scholarship comes into play. They get a scholarship, and, you know, they were probably marginal in high school while they were in high school. They oftentimes did not complete high school, our core members. And so they were probably in the lower half of performance, perhaps, in their high school, and now they suddenly have a scholarship. Mm. And you know, college seemed just out of sight, out of mind, and now it's a possibility. And wow, where do I want to use this? What do I want to do? One of my core members, love him, Deshaun. He wants to come to Parkside or Gateway. He has an interest in international affairs. He wants to learn French. And I'm thinking, Greg, I'm thinking, wow, where did this come from? But he has a scholarship, and he—that's what's driving him to remain in the program, because he can get up to four scholarships through our program. Wow. So he wants to go one to the next, to the next, to the next.
I'm trying to remember the term you used, but you were before we went on the air, you were saying that this is something which services people who, in a sense, are too old for a lot of other.
Overage.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Explain that a little further. What kinds of things have sort of passed just out of reach of the young adults that you end up then serving in this program?
So oftentimes the young adults in our program are core members, either didn't complete high school, unemployed, underemployed, and so time is not on their side, meaning they, you know, you can play around, you can enjoy life, but when you turn 19, 20, 21, 22, life changes, you change, your maturity changes, people move on out of your life, and suddenly you find yourself unskilled, undereducated, few connections, a limited myopic vision of what your life could be, and so that's really what we're moving toward in terms of expanding. I often like to think of, do you remember Monty Hall?
Oh, yeah.
And in that game show there would be a number of doors that you could choose, and I like to think I visualize our program as a series of doors that we keep presenting and allowing, so through credentials, through national credentials and licenses, a new door opens and another door opens and another door opens. And then that young adult suddenly finds that rather than just one or no options, they have 13, they have 16, and they can choose which door they want to go through. And for me, that's what I call economic freedom, because now they have the opportunity to make their life. And so that's what I was referring to, overage.
I was sharing with Chris that I recently had met a young man, a high school student actually, who certainly fits the description that Chris was just sharing with us. You know, having difficulty in a traditional school setting, as many people do. You don't have to be necessarily a city dweller to have difficulty in a traditional school setting. But when he became involved in a different situation that focused on experiential learning and leadership skills and all of those kinds of things, suddenly the career that he has chosen, which is that of an ornithologist, would probably never have entered his head prior to that. So those doors, those windows that open for people, whether they're quote unquote, you know, aged out at 22, which is phenomenal, you know, or still in high school, once that light comes in, people are only limited really by themselves. And the opportunity to connect with the natural world in doing that, whether somebody chooses it as a career or they choose it as a volunteer opportunity or a hobby or whatever it is, boy, that's something that we just don't emphasize enough in our society. You might get that in a traditional school setting when you go on a field trip once a semester, but that's pretty much it. So the component of doing field work and actual science when you're out there, man, that's just indispensable. It's invaluable.
Well, then you think about somebody who's growing up in what we might think of as a inner city kind of setting, situation, where, you know, to them the notion of the natural world is probably even more alien than it is for a lot of the rest of us who maybe get to kind of drive through it or be, mm-hmm. you know, relatively close to it. And we sort of know it's there in a way that somebody else growing up in a different situation, they scarcely even know what we're talking about, let alone know what sorts of opportunities the natural world has to offer us in terms of opportunities for study and learning. And
you know, the opportunity it creates for improvement in our urban centers, whether it's a big city or a small city, well, you know, urban centers have their own environmental problems that are often different from more rural settings or, you know, as we say, out in the county. So, you know, there's no natural habitat out there. So how do you take places and create habitat? How do you control lead deposition in the soil from living close to a freeway? How do you have pollinators, native pollinators in a city setting? All of those kinds of things can be brought back to those areas. It's not necessarily about urban flight, you know, once people learn about something completely different that they hadn't thought about before, but it's also how do we improve those areas? How do we control runoff, and how do we clean it, and all of those things? I mean, the possibilities are endless.
We've been looking at the free thinking that evolves and comes forth as our core members. So I can speak anecdotally about our experiences. As our core members become immersed in the environment, they start to see the bigger picture. And so I'll reference Sarah. Good job, Sarah. Sarah, who saw an article about pollinators and said, we need to do this. We need to put up these pollinator houses in Racine. And I forgot who else was sharing with us. We were at the REC, the Racine River Environmental Education Center, Community Center. And somebody mentioned Allison with the Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network. Hi, Allison. Shout out to you. She said, you know, as we were going through, she was pointing out invasive species and native plants. And she said, that milkweed, you want to make sure you don't touch that, because we're actually already experienced the decimation of milkweed, which is having an effect and impact on the monarch butterflies. And so one of my core members was saying, we should be seeding certain areas. And so These tangential thoughts that come from, like I said, free thinking as a result of associating their experiences has us moving in the direction now. You know, there have been eagle sightings down at the Lake Michigan in Racine. There have been in the western portion of the county, osprey construction of osprey. And so our core members are thinking more holistically and saying, we should do this, we should do that. And we now term it Green Racine. We need to come up with internally a map or a plan, a strategic plan to Green Racine for the next, you know, several decades, so that systematically our core members can continue to input or add value to the landscape in an urban environment, specifically to that city, to the city city boundaries.
For those of you just joining us, our guest on the morning show today is Chris Litzau, who is president of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, and with us in the studio as well, and the person who actually issued the invitation in the first place is, of course, our own Nan Calvert. Chris, the mechanics of how this works is probably something we haven't yet quite spelled out. We've talked a little bit about the means by which a given person might actually connect with you, being referred to you, or if they're already part of something else. When someone begins their association with Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps, are they part of a group? Do they, in a sense, move through the program sort of like a class does, or are you dealing with people sort of individually?
So that's an excellent question. If someone expresses an interest, we have an application process. Because we co-enroll into AmeriCorps has AmeriCorps is a national service program funded and supported through the Corporation for National and Community Service. It's a federal agency, and under the requirements for enrollment, they have to satisfy the Serve America Act. The short answer to that is they have to be fingerprinted. We have to fingerprint, and we have to conduct criminal background checks. So there are some administrative processes that we go through to enroll an individual. Once they come through there, we hold an orientation. They then have a year to complete their term of service. And as I was saying, it's what we call open entry, open exit. Today, one of your callers may contact me, www.greatlakescc.org, or just look us up, Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps. But anyhow, they may contact me, go through the process. We conduct an orientation, and then they're active. They become active members. And I mentioned two names recently, Maria and Sarah. Maria is in school at Horlicks, so her schedule differs a little bit. You know, during the summer, during school breaks, after school, she's available. So we accommodate her, and she joins up with us. Mm. Sarah is actually now also attending. She's at UWM. And so Sarah just contacted me. Yeah, my finals are done. I'm ready to go back full-time, and we're ready to do stream monitoring and sampling and so forth in tributaries throughout western Racine County. So they join up with us, but then there's a core group. And so that ebbs and flows, we accommodate. Mm. We may have one crew always active. Suddenly it may sprout to three crews. We may have volunteers joining in, and suddenly we're in large-scale mode. But in general, typically, it's on an individualized basis. It's crew-based, so they're always joining up with their colleagues in a crew-based operation. But whether they can join today or tomorrow, it varies by their individual availability and their schedules.
How long, typically, is somebody a part of this?
You know, it varies. I had a core member who had the time available during the summer, and so she blew through her four terms. So our terms are 300 hours, and if you break that down, depending on what your availability is, if you're at 8 hours a day, because that can be the case, or if you're at 14 hours a day, Nan mentioned August Marie Ball, who is on her board, or on the Southeastern Wisconsin Invasive Species Board. And so August and I partnered where some of her young people were co-enrolled in our program. And during the, from sunup to sundown, during the seasonal weather, we had, 12, 14-hour days that young people were putting in. And so anyhow, you can go through it pretty quickly, bang out those 300 hours, move into the next term and the next term. Or depending on someone's availability, it may take a year for them and maybe even longer. And so we may have to – I have one core member right now. She's on hiatus because she's in Thailand. And so we have the ability to freeze her in time, and then when she comes back, we pick up again and she continues on. She has 12 months – a year-long time to complete, but we can break that up and chunk it.
Okay. So it's more about the total number of hours than
exactly.
It is about any sort of fairly arbitrary arc of months.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep, exactly.
Interesting. When you are in this application process, I mean, when somebody approaches you and is interested and you are interested in them, what sorts of things then are you looking for? What kinds of criteria are involved? Do you essentially take just about anybody or everybody, or is it a program where you really need to be looking for a person's characteristics to make sure that, in fact, they possess the intelligence, work ethic, whatever is involved in them being a worthwhile contributor to this?
Yeah, that you laid out that spectrum. The spectrum at one end is a person who says, I just want to get my driver's license. When I was at Case, I didn't have the $200 to pay for a contractor or a vendor to provide me that commercial driving school. So I didn't get my driver's license. I just want to get my driver's license. At the other end of the spectrum, you've got what I call the green-blooded individuals who live, breathe, and I'll share Jared, who hiked the Pacific Crest Trail 1 year from Mexico to California when he was 18, or I think he was 18. And wow. So that's our spectrum of individuals. And I respect everyone, but the midpoint or the agreement is, fine, if you want your driver's license, because that's a component of our overall program, you need to be able to serve your community, we're going to ask you to make sure you're committed to serving your community. And serving your community also means all aspects, all requests, going out into the field, doing invasive species removal, doing things that you normally would not want to do, or you may have to force yourself to swallow your pride to do that stuff. I'll give you an example. We were out, we had a crew that went out to near Mequon in Ozaukee County, because the landscape around the region is so diverse. And what we have in Racine, they don't have over in Ozaukee County. What they have in Ozaukee County, we don't have the opportunity, the green opportunities, the environmental opportunities in Racine. Mm. And so we've got these exchanges going on. And we had Corps members who were wading through. They had to remove cattails to reconnect a tributary. Oh, my God, Greg. Talk about hard work. And not only that, but they had to wade through muck, like probably 18 inches of mucky water that, I mean, their knees were buried, and they had to trample through this stuff to get to their location where they were going to work and remove these cattails to reconnect, to create a channel, a stream, you know, to reconnect the tributary. Hard work, hard work. But they did it. And that's the type of initiative that we're looking for. So it's really about that spirit and attitude. Okay, if you want your driver's license, great. You need to be able to follow through with and join our team. You need to be a team player. And so that's really what it comes down to. Our application process is, I don't want to say arduous, but it's certainly, it's not just sign here and you're in. Mm-hmm. We require, hey, we're looking for you to perhaps provide us a resume. If you don't have one, we'll work with you to create one, or we'll guide you to Workforce Development Center or other locations. But in the end, what we're trying to do is, if you are interested, for some reason, if you don't make it into our program, for whatever reason, we want you to go through the process of the application process, so that you have value. We add value to you even before you come in. So you have a resume. You have registered for, you're a registered voter. So we require these things based on your age and your circumstance, so that if you don't come into our program, you have become stronger and better and smarter for it through the process.
Just the application process.
Exactly, just the application process. So it really tends to screen out individuals who just say, "Yeah, I'll try this," or maybe, you know, you've got to have some gumption of commitment, and that really allows us to get to the next level for the individuals. And then, like I said, you know, everyone is different, and to wade through muck and mire takes a fortitude, but everybody has that fortitude. I've seen it, you know, in some degree. So it's pretty neat.
I just have one question. Were there leeches?
We were in waders. So we were in hip waders, and we don't know. But I'll tell you, you know, again, being submerged in hip waders for a long period of time, that's a learning process itself. You know, did mine leak? How come I'm wet here? Mm-hmm. Oh, look at you. You know, what happened? And so those are the experiences that young people get that we just, you know, they're rare these days.
Right.
And that's all about, suddenly there's a connection and a pride, a sense of pride. Hey, oh, yeah, we were doing this and we did this. And they're able to tell their cousins, their family members, their parents, their guardians, their children, all the things that they've done, and it's remarkable.
And then to be able to go back and look at the fruits of your labor and realize that you've done something really good that leaves a legacy, whether it's short-term because you have to go back in and do it again, or long-term that has improved habitat, improved diversity. I mean, that's a point of pride for everybody.
We had I'm going to talk about Daniel for a second. We've been camped out, so to speak, not literally, but figuratively, at the rec. And there we began, we've used that kind of as our base of operations. The rec hasn't, to the best of our knowledge, and looking at the rings on the trees to gauge the year that this these invasive species have grown, it's probably been about 7 years that the area, the bluff, had been maintained. It was just overgrown. You couldn't see the river. You didn't even know what was down below, which presents a defensible safety issue as well in terms of just safety along the trail, because suddenly you're in the middle of nowhere. So our crews had been systematically, we worked with Weed Out Racine, and they were, and a number of other partners, UW Parkside is there. And so they had been guiding us with technical assistance. So we had been systematically working from the north end to the south end, arduous, very arduous. But Daniel started with us. Daniel had some family challenges, family issues, that took him away to Texas. And he was gone for, I think, for a few months. He came back and he said, and just recently we were, our crew was talking in front of the United Way Youth as Resources Committee. And Daniel said, one of the things that was remarkable is when I came back, I could see the river. I could see what an impact the crew had made there at the wreck, and it was phenomenal. And so, that's what you're talking about, Nan. That it, we go, our crews go through this stuff daily, and only until the old forest from the trees, proverbial axiom, I guess, or whatever euphemism. They don't always see the impact. And so at the end of each day, we need to take, we try to take a step back and say, look at what you did. We can now see, you see the bend at 6th Street over there with the river? It's awesome. So,
well, I'm glad you described this, because that's actually one of my points of concern. Was sometimes when you do this, I mean, it's one thing when you've hacked down a bunch of invasive plants and there was a bunch of them there and now they're not there anymore, and you almost immediately understand the difference that you made in that little plot of earth. But there's probably other things that you do in which the difference you've made is a more subtle kind of difference, or maybe a difference that really isn't apparent to the naked eye at all, now or ever. I mean, sometimes you're talking about that kind of work. And I suppose that in and of itself is also a real benefit for them to understand that. Sometimes you do good things that are just a really small step in a really long process, and you don't even see the end of it yourself.
Colonial Park is a wonderful example. I mean, there's just so much that can be done over there, Greg, that, you know, baby steps. And after one baby step, you cannot see the impact. It takes several. And by that, what I'm hearing you say is there's a sense of fortitude that develops, perseverance, grit is the word of the day these days. And that's really what work ethic is, really what we're talking about, where you can stay at something in and out, I mean, a prolonged period of time, and you become disciplined. And, yeah, eventually you see the impact, but it's about keeping your head down, doing what's required, you know, following orders, making an impact. And that is about transforming lives. You know, it's about developing the individual. And so that's really what comes out as they develop their community, you know.
Yeah, it's about introducing that concept that you're part of a greater good. Mm-hmm. And you might not see that greater good right away,
that's right,
but it's there, and you're a key component to that. No matter what your age or your educational level or, you know, where you grew up, you're part of that greater good, and you can have an amazing impact while you're connecting with this planet that you live on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
As our time dwindles down here rapidly, I do want you to say a word about experiential living, because it's something we hear a lot about, even at the collegiate level at a place like Gateway or Carthage, where I teach. And certainly it's an important concept, but that one that probably a lot of people don't even really fully understand. Maybe restate what that is, what that principle is about, and then maybe give us a tangible example of how that plays out for somebody who's part of the Great Lakes Community Conservation Corps.
Sure. So when we talk about experiential, that's really a highfalutin word that really means just getting your hands dirty. Okay, we want, it means real application. Fine, I read about it. I saw the video. I heard somebody teach me about it. I saw examples of it. But we're talking really about kinesthetic learning, okay? And I'll give you an example. So we're going through chainsaw training. And the Bureau of Land Management has a certification, a national certification that it requires for forestry experts called Faller Class A apprentice certification. That's what we train on. So we're able to take down 8-inch diameter trees. There are a series of tasks that need to occur for somebody to pass and get that certification. And one of those is chain tensioning, pulling apart that chainsaw, putting the bar back on and adjusting it accordingly. You can read about it. You can see the videos of it. You can see somebody show you how to do it. But until you get that grease and chain oil on your hands and you put the bar back on, and this just happened yesterday, where my core members are saying, Chris, what is going on? We put this thing back on. And I said, okay, well, let's take another look at this. Look at the chain tensioning screw there. Watch what happens. Okay, you try. You do it. Oh, yeah, okay. And now I was mentioning earlier Fantasia. Shout out to Fantasia. Fantasia, who suddenly these mechanical abilities come forth, she surpasses the males. Sorry, guys. You know she's – but so she's putting these chainsaws back together. She's jumping around to the different teams and where they're having difficulties. She's showing them what she learned by experience. And another example, Greg, is you know, our region is focused on water quality and being the hub of water, and the way we put that into practice is it's several ways, but one of the main ones is really we see stream monitoring and data collection as the entry point to water chemistry analysis, lab work, the water utilities, both drinking and so our utility district in Cal. I always pay the Caledonia water utility bill, and so that's what we're looking at from a career perspective, from a workforce development perspective. But anyhow, experiential learning in that case is really about going out and doing on a daily basis or weekly basis, collecting that water quality data, monitoring the tributaries, entering that data or collecting it, measuring it, collecting it, entering it into the DNR's database. That whole process of having to put on their hip or chest waders to wade out into the water, figure out what the flow is, what the dissolved oxygen levels are, on, and recording that stuff, and then the word is escaping me, essentially cleaning themselves off so they don't transport the snails or any of the other invasives.
Almost like decontamination.
That's exactly it. Decontamination. That was what early. I need more coffee or something. I don't know. Maybe not. But in any case, that whole process is really hands-on learning. It's kinesthetic learning. It's doing. And so the simplest answer, like you were saying, it's so important for young people who are learning to have the opportunities to succeed and to fail and to learn and improvise and do the MacGyver, if you will, and figure out how to make it work so that they can follow through on their objective. And that's really what we mean by experiential.
I think it's extremely important. A couple of things that Chris was saying, it's extremely important for women of all ages, but especially young women who are just coming up, to realize that they too can use heavy, dangerous equipment, because we are not exposed to that in school.
It's not dangerous
if you do the right way. That's right.
Learn those safety protocols.
That's right.
Yep. So let's.
But
just,
you know, it's much more common for men to sling a chainsaw around than a woman to sling a chainsaw around, and there isn't any reason that we can't do it. There's no reason that we can't drive drive a backhoe or a front-end loader or
That's
all
right.
of those things.
That's right.
And it's very intimidating, especially when you're a young woman, because there is that sort of, I don't know, sort of unspoken pressure. Well, you know, you're a girl, you can't do that. But that's a bunch of bunk. And I think, you know, having a program like this, boy, that's great. It should be happening everywhere. And then also, all of those things that you just mentioned, water quality monitoring and invasive species removal, and certainly I know there's some replanting, other land management type of components that go into that. It's all science.
Exactly.
This is real world science
Math,
in action.
Science,
yes.
STEM are
exactly.
And that's, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because shame on those who think that females can't, or minorities or underrepresented populations can't do this type of work. Mm-hmm. And shame on those individuals who think they can't do that, though that they are not able to do that type of work. Mm-hmm. Because my experience has been, just as you were saying, when given the opportunity, those who are least represented, whether by gender, race, age, they just step up and they shine. I mean, I often tell in our hazardous waste operations and emergency response class, which is about dealing with hazardous chemicals and working safely, health and safety practices, I often tell, make a statement, the females do better than the males. And that's nothing against the males. It helps to create some motivation, but it's also, you know, driven by experience. I see it. And I know that, again, given the opportunities, and when we talk about back to the experiential learning, we need to be able to STEM. We talk about STEM all the time, science, technology, engineering, and math. Mm-hmm. And we're really saying females can do it just as well as males. We just need to facilitate those hands-on kinesthetic learning opportunities that mean something. So the missing piece there is meaningful, which means I'm not just going through the motions. Mm-hmm. You're telling me, yeah, I've got to go out, I've got to do some invasive species. I'm understanding what the bigger picture is. Service learning is often what it's called, where they're making an impact in their community. Mm-hmm. But I'm so glad to hear you talk about females
huge. I'm a card-carrying member of femaledom, so it's easy to talk about. But I think, too, the other part of that is that it's mind-expanding for young men, older men, any men, when they see that women can do these things and do them really well. It hopefully begins to expand their idea of what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man, and that we don't necessarily have these hard and fast gender roles that we have to stick to. Perhaps men can see then, you know, especially if you're young, and 22 is young, you know, we're talking about them being aged out.
Yeah.
That's still a child.
Right. Yes.
that it's okay for a man to suddenly look at this beautiful native woodland plant and be utterly brought to their knees by it. There's nothing wrong with that. And maybe that then will translate into becoming a forest ecologist or, you know, a soils ecologist or something of that nature. Mm-hmm. So these opportunities that you're presenting to people have such great potential, such great sort of, you know, world-changing potential. It's sad that it isn't happening for everybody.